we'll get straight into it. So first of all, I wanted to ask, I mean, it wouldn't be a 2020 interview if I didn't ask about the elephant in the room. How's COVID-19 kind of affected you, and what are you kind of doing to pass the time?
Well, yeah, like everyone else, the whole world changes every day. Where I live in Montreal, it's been the most affected out of everywhere in Canada. But also, I'm feeling very grateful and very, very lucky to be living somewhere where, yeah, we have a place, having a place to live, like a safe place to live, living in a city where everybody really takes the healthcare system seriously and takes the situation seriously is really good. So, yeah, the actions are what matter the most. So, doing the same recommendations as everyone else, not really going outside, and then the rest of the time, yeah, trying to keep busy by being useful, by playing shows online, trying to work on new music, listening to other people's music.
And I also saw you had a little indoor herb garden as well that you've started. How's that going?
It's getting there. You know, we don't get enough light in the wintertime the way that you do in Australia. Even in the winter, you get more light. So I'm trying to encourage the seedlings a little bit with the grow light as well that I have. We'll see. Some of them are doing really well, and some of them are being stubborn. So we'll see.
We'll get to the album. So Are You In Love, it's, first of all, congratulations, incredible album. And I think comes to all of us at a very fitting time when we're all sitting at home and have time to really listen to entire albums. So well done. But I wanted to kind of talk about the, you know, the love that you've kind of written it about. You've really dealt with two parallels of love with your partner and also the loss of your father. How did you kind of reconcile those two together?
Well, they're harder to talk about than to sing about, much easier to sing about. It's a really confusing thing because in a lot of ways, my father and I were not close. And so I'd spent a lot of time trying to help him and thinking that my place in his life was one particular kind of role and realizing it was another kind of role. And so that was something that was hard to accept and took a lot of time to accept. And especially when he passed, all these different things that I thought maybe I could have changed or maybe I could have done differently, accepting that, you know, my part in his life and his part in my life, I didn't get to be in charge of that story. And so I had to like allow what was to be in order to truly like have empathy and love him. So that part was a really lifelong, it's still a lifelong experience of how do you reconcile, yeah, not just like, you know, narratives that you tell yourself about your parents when you're growing up versus when you get older. Who you are is so influenced by your parents as well, whether we like it or not. And so, you know, they come back to you. He's a part of me forever. So knowing that has also been very helpful. And falling in love has really taught me that kind of empathy and like giving everyone that space to be themselves and to grow into who they are. How to love people into being is not always easy or simple. Like I said, it's easier to sing about than it is to talk about sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, I get that. But also you said, you know, that you found it difficult to kind of write. You were afraid to write what you wanted to write.
Yes, I was afraid to go to certain places in my songs in the past just because then you have to really confront them. You can't just like make up some kind of, you know, cliche statement, or you can't rely on just like clever rhymes or, you know, something that feels like semi-appropriate. You really want to feel like you get it right. Mm. So that part, you know, takes time as well. And sometimes you have to really like, at least for me, I had to accept that sometimes an imperfect gesture is better than no gesture at all.
And you said that empathy was obviously a really big part of what this whole kind of process has taught you. But when you originally set out to write the album, compassion and empathy was a really, you know, important influence. Why was that particular message so important for you at the time?
It's so funny to think about that time. Now, it felt like the whole world was going through a lot of dramatic shifts at the end of four years ago, like at the end of 2016 and the beginning of 2017. It felt like everything was shifting very radically. Felt like a lot of people were putting up walls, figuratively and literally. Felt like people were really diving into fear. Feel like it felt like people, not just people, like, but it felt like a worldwide crisis of trust, I guess, on a lot of levels, between neighbors, between, I don't know, like between in relationships. It just was an energy that I was feeling everywhere, whether it was real or perceived, but I think a lot of people were perceiving that same kind of energy. And so I thought, well, the only way that I feel like I can combat that in my own life is to focus on compassion and love. And how can I write about that? And how do you approach writing about a subject like that? You know, the first way you do is you just trial and error. You just try with like your seedlings. You just plant a lot of seeds and you see which ones come up and which ones seem the strongest to like growing up towards that sun, and try to give them all a chance. So when I was writing it, I really didn't realize how much I would need these songs for myself. Because yeah, when my father passed, it did put me into quite a deep depression. It was a very challenging time, and I had a lot of trouble even finishing some of the music because I wasn't sure how to split myself between feeling these different emotions, which were, you know, grief and like trying to sort through all these different feelings in the past and different like experiences and different memories, both good and bad. And then also, how could you make a record? Like, I wanted to feel like I could put myself emotionally in both places. And similarly, just realizing that when I was able to come back to those songs, they were telling me everything that I needed to know, which was kind of, very beautifully uncanny experience. Yeah. And part of it was something that I maybe already knew in my intuition, and I just needed to take a pause and like, yeah, let those seedlings grow, whether it's in the song or in my own heart, so that they can be strong enough to stand on their own.
And so being from Montreal, you probably don't see a whole lot of desert, but most of the album was actually recorded in the Mojave Desert. Why was that?
I've always been attracted to places that are the opposite of what I know. I was born in Toronto. I live in Montreal, fairly northern as far as North America goes, although certainly not the furthest north. I'm also in love with the Yukon, for example. I love going there, and I made a record in the Yukon a decade ago now, actually. So I'm always trying to find places, and I'm attracted to these kind of places, and because they force you to harmonize with things that maybe are unfamiliar to you. They inspire like a kind of, in order to be successful, I think if you're not from somewhere, you know, even if you're traveling, people always say like, you want to travel and live like the locals do, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, even with music, like you have to listen to the place, you have to feel the energy of a certain place, and it will create something new. Like if you try to harmonize with that place, it will create something new than maybe what your just daily routine may do. At least for me, that's been my experience.
So how did the Joshua Trees create something new for you?
Well, Joshua Trees are so cool in general, but also just the desert. It's so funny. It's cliche, but it's true. People go to the desert for soul searching quests. It's a place where, historically and in myths, is a place of a lot of soul searching, because it is so quiet, because there is so much hidden behind the scenes. It looks like a place where there's nothing going on at first. People will think the desert is an empty, lifeless place, but there is so much life hidden if you examine it carefully. So it inspires this kind of deep listening. Joshua Trees themselves, I got to learn a little bit about them, and I'm definitely not an expert on the ecosystem there, but that particular climate and that particular ecosystem is so special, and I think that's part of what gives that location such an incredible energy, is that it is so dependent on these vast extremes in temperature, very specific altitude, very specific kind of plants and animals relying on each other and working together for the entire ecosystem to exist. So Joshua trees, they grow really slowly. If you picture what they look like with their arms kind of all in these different shapes, and they're very dramatic looking, they're dependent on a very good frost, like, or deep freeze, for the tree to stimulate enough flowering to grow their arms. So a tree that's just kind of straight up with no arms, which you'll see some of those, you'll see a lot of them actually in the desert, are ones that haven't been touched by that kind of extreme effect of the climate, shooting from very hot to very cold. They haven't benefited yet from that deep freeze. And I just thought it was a very beautiful thing to be able to see, like, okay, there's actually this entire range of existence that is necessary for these plants to live. It's actually very challenging temperatures and very challenging conditions that are required for these trees to be.
Mm. And you guys did spend quite a lot of time going hiking and lighting campfires and stuff when you were out there. But one of the guys that you were out there with was Jim James from My Morning Jackets.
Yeah.
It's the second time that you've teamed up with Jim. What was it like producing another album with him?
It was really fun. It was different this time because we put ourselves all out of our elements. And he and I had talked about doing a record in Joshua Tree for good advice, but the timing, okay, we couldn't get it all to work out logistically. So the fact that we got this to work out for this record when it did is also a bit of serendipitous luck at the same time. Just with everything that we were all going through in our lives, it felt like the right place to be. And I think, like, it's so funny because you kind of get reunited, all the same people. We got all the same kind of crew to come down and play. We added a few extra people. My husband, Andrew, we weren't married at the time, but he came and played on the record as well. And he made some really beautiful, like, very cool, all this really, really cool, crazy kind of additions, weaving them throughout.
He did a field recording, didn't he, of the Desert Wind that made it onto the album. Is that right?
Yeah, we did a lot of field recordings, and that was kind of our initial idea too, was to record outside and really truly harmonize with the environment as much as possible. So it's fun to take your whole group of friends that you already know, and then you throw yourselves into this completely different place. So it's kind of fun because you get to experience a whole other part of the world. It's a bit like a combination of a camping trip or like extended trip with your buds.
But you get an album as a souvenir.
Yeah, and you have the album as a souvenir. And also, like, you know, there is this, we were able to get into like a really good groove where we were ritualized in this way where we take the mornings to ourselves. You know, you'd play a little bit after lunch. You'd work on some of the arrangements and the music and things like that, get a sense of how we want the song to feel, because we wanted to record as much as possible live and record even outside a lot of the time. Like, so get a sense of that. And then we'd all like watch the sunset. And the sunset was sort of like when all the power of the desert really like starts to make itself like, starts to like tingle, you know, like everybody starts to like feel this different kind of energy. All the animals start to come out. So you'd see little bunnies jumping around and all these different things. It's like quite idyllic in a certain way. And once you kind of have all that energy, we'd go back in and record, and we'd get like the take usually at night. Because all of that kind of electrical charge or solar charge that everybody had, like the whole earth had been getting in that moment, all of a sudden was kind of let out once the stars came out. So that was like a really amazing experience, because we knew that something like that could happen, but you don't know till you get there. And then, you know, it's like when you're with your friends, like you can kind of also goof around. You can, even if you're going through a hard time, you can laugh about it. Like, we'd always just have so many jokes going around, but it was always really fun.
Yeah, it sounds like an amazing experience. I mean, you're talking very highly of it.
It really was. I feel like, especially looking back on it now, I can't believe I got to, that's one of the great privileges of my life, is to get to make records, and to do that and to have a dream like that come true is very special for me. Even though there was a lot of emotional, challenges that I was going through at the time, it felt really lucky that I could be there with people that I trust and work on things in that way.